to show convolution in one dimension. So gn is fk hn minus k summed on k. That is standard convolution. So h needs to be reversed with respect to the index of summation h minus k. The index of summation is k. And shifted by n, h n minus k, to the position n, or by that amount where you want the output gn. And the summation is up to n because of causality. It starts with 0 because of causality too. So the index n may be run over a certain range of interest or over all time for which gn exists, depending upon what kind of a signal you have and what kind of an impulse response you have. For each n, the reversed and shifted version of h is multiplied with the signal f on a point-by-point basis, and all those partial products are summed. So the multiplication and summation operation together are compared to the dot product operation performed over the non-zero and overlapping parts of the two signals as given by this formula. But that interpretation is something extra. You don't have to worry about that. But if you wish, you may interpret the operation in that manner. And this example will show you that. Now, suppose you have fn equal to 4, 1, 3, 1, four values, and hn is 3, 2, 1. And when I write values like this, they are for n going 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on. Okay? So on purpose, I have made these unequal in duration. So this has four samples, n going 0 to 3, and this has three samples, n going 0 to 2. Now, when you do linear convolution, the result g will have more samples, and the number of samples will be n1 plus n2 minus 1, and in this case, you will have this has 4, this has 3, so 4 plus 3 minus 1, you will have 6 samples in the output for linear convolution. So here is a linear convolution performed for n going 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and fn goes only from 0 to 3 as the values 4, 1, 3, 1, and hn goes only from 0 to 2, 3, 2, 1, and then I'm putting a 0 there because it has no more samples. Now let's write the index k as going 0 to 7. K is the temporary index for summation in the convolution, and fk is the same as fn, 4, 1, 3, 1, and then let's put 0 for the rest. Now for convolution, one of the signals must be reversed and shifted, so let us take h and write it as h minus k. So for k going 0, for k equal to 0, you get h0, and then minus 1, minus 2, minus 3, you just write those values backwards. So for the output at n equal to 0, you take fk and h0 minus k, and then take a product, and the only overlap exists for n equal to 0, 4 times 3, and that is 12. And then you shift h minus k by one sample, so you get the 3 at k equal to 1, and then 2, 1, 0. And now take a product of this shifted version with fk. And there are two values overlapping, 3 with 1 and 2 with 4. So 4 times 2, 8 plus 3 times 1, that gives you 11 here. And keep doing that. So for each position, you shift the reversed h and multiply the overlapping part with the corresponding part of fk. And these are the output values for gn. Now gn has values for n going 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. For the last one, that is 6 samples that are non-zero, and after that the values are 0. So that is standard convolution. If you want, I can check it with MATLAB or do it yourself and check. So this is the result of linear convolution. Now in matrix notation, in order to achieve the same result, you must extend the signals to have the same duration as the expected output duration. So we know that the output will have 4 plus 3 minus 1 equal to 6 non-zero values. So you must extend the input signal by at least that many samples to have 6 samples minimum. It only has 4 samples that are non-zero, so put 2 more zeros. So this is zero padding. If you want, you can put more zeros, it doesn't matter. You will get just get zero values for the output. Similarly, the impulse response, which is 3, 2, 1, must also be padded with 0, 0, 0, 0 for 6 values. And then you take those values and write in this manner. You write it in reverse order. H0 comes here, H1 there, H2 there, and then the remaining are 0. The next row, you shift this row to the right by one position in a circular manner. So shift it, the 2 goes out but comes back here, the 3 comes here, and the 1 goes there, and the zeros are in between. The next one, you shift this row by 1 to the next position. The 1 goes out, comes back here, the 2 is shifted, 3 is shifted by one position, 0, 0, 0. Repeat that right through to the end. Now, if you make this signal F, this is F. If you add more zeros, then you must add more zeros to H also to the same extent, so there will be more zeros in between. So if you extend F to 10 samples for some reason, then this also must have 10 samples. So when you multiply the matrix, you have the same number of values here and on the row. So now the matrix product is HF equal to G. So take this, column matrix, which is F, take the first row of H, make a product of that with the first row, you get this first value. Take that and the second row, you get this value. Take that and the third row, you get that value, and so on. So convolution now is a matrix operation G equal to HF. You must construct the matrix appropriately, and this is periodic convolution, but we have adjusted it with zero padding such that the result is the same as linear convolution. Now, by construction in this problem, because I put 4 samples here and 3 here, you cannot do periodic convolution itself directly. If I had given only 3 samples here and 3 here, you could have done periodic convolution. But I didn't construct it that way. So I constructed here such that we are using periodic convolution by zero padding to achieve the same result as linear convolution. So in MATLAB, if you simply say convolve, C-O-N-V, you will get linear convolution like this. Okay? So you can verify that linear convolution gives you that result here, and that result 12, 11, 15, 10, 5, 1 is the same as what we are getting here by matrix multiplication, which represents circular or periodic convolution. So this is 1D. Okay? Is that clear? Okay. You can make up more examples if you wish of this type. Now let's look at convolution in 2D, which is a little bit more complicated. So the output of a linear shift invariant imaging or image processing system is the convolution of the input image F alpha beta with the point spread function H, written here as H m minus alpha n minus beta, summed over all alpha and beta. So here alpha and beta are the temporary variables for summation. The output is GMN. When the point spread function is much smaller than the input image, it is more convenient to locate the origin at the center of the point spread function. In 2D, we're not concerned about causality. And also, in space, spreading functions will spread in all directions about the origin, about some origin. So if I take a picture from here and my lens is not focused, then a point source at a distance will be spread equally in all directions. It depends upon my lens, of course. In some situations, the spread function may not be isotropic. For example, if there is relative motion and my camera moves, for example, I'm going in a car and I take a picture, the light source there will be spread as a line. An impulse source at a distance, or a light source at a distance, which can be seen as an impulse, will be spread into a straight line depending upon the speed of travel, assuming that we are moving with constant velocity and so on. Then it is not isotropic. But in general, the spread function need not be causal, so it spreads in all directions. Then it is convenient to put the origin in the middle of this impulse response, rather than some coordinate system where you have the origin outside the impulse response. Then we use positive and negative indices to represent the non-causal nature of the point spread function. Then you could write it like this: alpha going minus m to m, beta going minus m to m, f alpha beta, hm minus alpha, n minus beta. The point spread function is then going from minus m to plus m with the origin in the middle. So the size is 2m plus 1 times 2m plus 1. Then convolution can be expressed as a mask operation. Typically, the scene that you are taking an image of is a big scene, and the point spread function is fairly small. So each point in the image is spread, and all the effects of the spreading will be added up. So convolution could be seen as this mask of impulse response, which has to be reversed in x and y for convolution, h minus alpha, n minus beta. But if it is isotropic, it doesn't matter. If it is not isotropic, reversal will matter. Then at every point, you are summing the product of these values of the impulse response with the points in the image over which there is overlap, and adding them, and the corresponding value is written in the output. And then this position is moved to the next pixel in the input, and the same happens. And then you run over the entire image with this mask and perform the convolution operation in this manner. So it is a mask operation on the input image with the mask, which is the, with the mask being the impulse response reversed in x and y. So the point spread function is flipped or reflected or reversed about both of its axes and placed on top of the image at the coordinate where the output value is to be computed. A point-by-point multiplication is performed of the overlapping areas, and the resulting products are added, and then you move on to the next point and do the whole thing. So the operation needs to be performed at every spatial location for which the output exists by dragging and placing the reversed point spread function at every pixel. Okay? So let's see how that is done in 2D with a numerical example. So here is the point spread function. I just put some numbers. It cannot be a physical point spread function. You don't get values like that. But I just wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, so we can see the effect of reversal. So the origin is in the middle. Y-axis and x-axis there, and the origin is at the center. So about that center, you reflect it. So 147 is written as 741. 258 is 852. 369 as 963. So it's like taking a mirror image about this axis, and then about that axis. So 963 here will go there. 741 will come here. Okay? Now, suppose the input image is this. I put small numbers, 1, 2, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1, some numbers there, a bunch of numbers. You take this reversed mask and put it on every pixel. I have written that here, 96385271, and put it on that position. If the output is wanted there for this position, the mask is placed on top of that pixel, and you multiply the overlapping values of the reflected point spread function placed on the image at that location. So 9 multiplied with 1, 6 with 1, 3 times 2, 8 times 2, 5 times 2, 2 times, 2 times 1, 7 times 2, 4 times 3, 1 time, 1 multiplied by 4. Add all of these up and you get 79. And for another position here, I have shown the same thing, you get 88. And do that for all positions, you get that result. Note that I have written this image as an image that is bigger than the input image by one row and one column at the top and bottom and left and right. So the output image is bigger than the input image according to the size of the convolution mask. Okay? So that is convolution in 2D. Now let us look at the circulant matrix. We will come back to representation of 2D convolution as a matrix later. But let's go back to the circulant matrix that we saw in the case of 1D convolution. Let me go back and show you that. G equal to HF for periodic convolution, we got this matrix, which is a circulant matrix. Okay, these are values of the impulse response arranged along each row, and each row is a right shifted version of the previous row. So let's come back here. An important property of a circulant matrix is that it is converted into a diagonal matrix by the Fourier transform, by the DFT. And to show that, let us write a general circulant matrix as C0, C1, C2, so on, Cn minus 1. There are n values. And write them again by shifting. C0 comes here, C1 there, C2 there, and Cn minus 1 is shifted out and comes back here. And go all the way through to the last row, C1, C2, so on, C0. C0 is shifted there. You shift this, Cn minus 1 comes. Where is that? Shift this rather, C0 goes there, and C1 goes there, and so on. Okay. So consider now the DFT. Let W be equal to this operator, exponential j 2 pi over n. And W to the power of k, capital N will be equal to 1, because this will be canceled, and then you get k times 2 pi, which is equal to 1. The sine of that, and the sine is 0 and the cosine is 1. So W to the power of k going 0 to n minus 1 are the n distinct roots of unity that form the DFT as we saw earlier. Okay. Now, consider this function, lambda k, where C0, C1, C2, so on, are multiplied with W to the power of k, multiplied with the index of c, which is shown as 0, 1, 2, 3 here, which is taking the Fourier transform of that row. Okay? But let's just look at this without having to worry about the Fourier transform implication right now. There is a small change in the power of W that we need to account for later. So take this expression and multiply that with W to the power of k. So when you do that, when W to the power of k is multiplied with all of these values, look at the last value that has W to the power of n minus 1 k. When that gets multiplied with W to the power of k, you add W to the power of n k minus k plus k. So the minus 1 here gets canceled. And you get W to the power of nk, which is equal to 1. So Cn minus 1 has no W multiplier. C0 gets multiplied with Wk. C1 was multiplied with Wk. Multiply that with W to the power of k again. You get W to the power of 2k, and so on. So just increment the power of W here by 1. And rewrite this by bringing the value of C that has no multiply over W to the front. So just a little bit of reorganization. And then do that again, Cn minus 2 comes here, and then the rest come in that order. And repeat it, you get C1 here. So all we're doing is repeatedly multiplying this expression with W to the power of k that releases one of these values of C from that multiplier. Effectively, that becomes unity. And then the others get one incremented power of W. That expression, that series of expressions, may be written in a compact manner as lambda k wk equal to c wk, where this wk is made up of 1 wk w to the power of 2k, so on w to the power of n minus 1k transpose, which are all of these values written, wk, w2k, so on wn minus 1k. Okay. So this is a compact representation of all of those equations put together. This represents an eigenvalue or eigenproblem situation where lambda k is an eigenvalue and wk is an eigenvector of that matrix C. Now, we have seen this quantity w to the power of k before as values around the unit circle. And there are n values of wk, k going 0 to n minus 1, that are distinct or unique. And there are n distinct eigenvectors of wk, which may be written as an n by n matrix. W is w0, w1, so on, wn minus 1. And that is related to the DFT, as we will see now. The nkth element of this matrix W is exponential j 2 pi over n to the power 2 multiplied with nk. That is the formulation of this matrix W now. And due to orthogonality of the complex exponential functions, the nkth element of W inverse is given by the conjugate of that. And W inverse is equal to the identity matrix, or W inverse W. I is the n by n identity matrix. And the columns of W are linearly independent. So with this construction of the matrix W, combining all of the WK vectors into a matrix now, the eigenvalue problem or relationship may be written as W lambda is CW, where all of them are n by n matrices. And this capital lambda is a diagonal matrix whose elements are equal to lambda k, and the rest of the values are all zero. Lambda k going 0 to n minus 1 along the diagonal. So you can turn this around and write this as C equal to W lambda W inverse. So this is the relationship that we stated earlier, that a circulant matrix is diagonalized by the DFT operator W. C is a circulant matrix that we started with. We constructed that matrix. W is related to the DFT matrix, as we have seen before. And lambda, by this construction, is a diagonal matrix. So C is now represented or equivalent to a diagonal matrix pre-multiplied and post-multiplied by W and W inverse. So, or if you look here, application of the DFT matrix to C will result in a diagonal matrix with also that matrix W coming on the side. Okay? Now let's look at what it means as to what we have in this matrix. With periodic convolution, H is a circulant matrix. So H, the little h, is W, DH, W inverse, where by DH I mean the diagonalized version of H that corresponds to lambda that we wrote earlier. Because we'll have several diagonal matrices later on, we will call them D with a subscript that indicates what it relates to. So the elements of DH are given by multiplying the first row of the matrix H with W and K. That is how we wrote that matrix. HK is H0, HN minus 1 WK, HN minus 2 W to the power of 2K, and so on. This is a discrete Fourier transform relationship, and HK, capital HK, is the discrete Fourier transform of HN. There is a little bit of difference in the notation. The series H represents H, capital N minus N, because it's a reversed version of the impulse response. We started by writing H0 and then H1 at the other end and writing backwards. So this is H minus N. We just added capital N, the period, to make all the indices positive. And we have assumed that this is a periodic signal. So the values of W in this construction we wrote as exponential plus J 2 pi over N, NK. But the signal actually is H minus N. So if you change the variables and take minus N to plus M, then this exponential plus will become a minus. So it is the Fourier transform. It is the forward Fourier transform according to our convention. Just because H, the first row, was written in reversed order, there is the small change. So let's go back to G equal to HF. And H now is W DH W inverse. So we have G equal to HF, which is the convolution. And H now is written as W DH W inverse using the Fourier transform. And F. So this gives another interpretation of this whole representation involving the Fourier transform. So let's take one operation at a time. W inverse F is the Fourier transform of F. There's a scale factor 1 over N. You need to account for it somewhere. So first, working from the right, that's the order of matrix multiplication. W inverse is applied to F, and that we know is the Fourier transform. And then the multiplication by DH, DH is a diagonal matrix, and when you multiply, that corresponds to point by point transform filtering of the DFT of H. And then multiplication by W, finally this one, corresponds to the inverse DFT. And then there is a scale factor there that you need to account for. So this represents filtering. We know convolution is filtering. G equal to HF, or G equal to H convolved with F, represents filtering. In the frequency domain, we know that corresponds to GUV equal to HUV, or we are talking about 1D here. So GN is HK times FK. The Fourier transform values are multiplied one element at a time. That is exactly what is happening here too, except now W inverse F is giving F of K. That is multiplied with a matrix D, but the matrix has values only along the diagonal. The others are all zero. So when you multiply F of K given by W inverse with this matrix D, only the values along the diagonal affect the values in the input matrix of FK. So what you get here is FK multiplied with HK. W here is the inverse Fourier transform, because W contains exponential plus J2 pi over N NK. So you get the output G, which contains GN, the samples of the output array. Okay? So now in matrix representation, we have the filtering operation expressed as convolution to begin with as G equal to HF, and now expanded with the diagonalization property of the circulant matrix, where now we can interpret this as multiplying in the frequency domain of the Fourier transform of the signal with the Fourier transform of the impulse response, which are the filter coefficients, and then taking the inverse transform. So this is filtering in the Fourier domain in matrix notation, equivalent to convolution in the time domain. So all of these expressions are leading to the same result. Gn equal to Hn convolved with Fn, that's one dimensional convolution. Output is the convolution of the input with the impulse response. Gk equal to Hk times Fk, that is filtering in the frequency domain. The Fourier transform converts convolution to multiplication, point by point. G equal to Hf is the matrix representation of that convolution. G equal to WdH, W inverse F is the matrix representation of the same operation, which can now be interpreted as Gk equal to Hk times Fk. So they're all the same thing. Okay? Any questions on that?